once again talking about anime and talking about the end in this case, because we're on to the end of Haruhi Suzumiya season one, at least the final episode thereof. This is The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya, episode or part six, episode 13 in broadcast order. And so we're here with this very ordinary day, which is kind of interesting.
An ordinary day in the life of Haruhi.
Yeah. Kyon. Yeah. And this is, I think, the first time we've seen Kyon and his little sister out traveling to school together. So off she's going to elementary school. There's apparently she sees a friend. Yeah, they're her friends. Off she goes. And Kyon's going off to school on his bicycle, talking about everything's normal.
Nice sunny day.
Yeah.
No snow.
Hanabuchi's there. And Kyon's remembering his recent memories for him, which is that Yuki just rescued him from Ryoko's murderous intentions, which was pretty, pretty strong. So again, this is kind of reminding us that in broadcast order that we kind of bounced around a little bit, but in terms of actual time, we're just after the big fight with Yuki and Ryoko.
She's still in her gym clothes
because it's hot. So we're really doubling down on how boring this is, to the point where Haruhi hasn't shown up yet for the club.
But the club's all just relaxing there.
Yeah, they're all kind of doing their stuff. Kyon decides to spend a little time looking at
folder?
His stuff. So the interesting thing about this is that initially you think, oh yeah, he's looking at photos of Mikuru.
Oh, but she mentioned something to him in one of the previous episodes about... Right. A star-shaped mole.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
He mentioned that to her. He's the one who pointed it out to her.
Yeah.
Or is he? Because really, she pointed it out to him that he pointed it out to her. And
right.
Now he's investigating to point out to her
yeah.
what she already told him that he had pointed out to her.
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey. So, yeah, so he's verifying that, sure enough, she has a star-shaped mole on her.
Star-shaped mole on her
her upper buttocular region. And of course, Mikuru discovers
folder?
This.
Oh, what's this folder?
He's very excited. And it's interesting. It's interesting seeing here how they kind of edit this shot where Mikuru's very enjoying herself and she's excited. And,
so soft.
And Yuki's actually paying attention, which is interesting. And
keep away.
Yeah, playing a little keep away. And then Haruhi shows up, and everything stops.
Suddenly,
and
she pulls her hands off and creeps back away.
Haruhi creeps to one side. It's adorable. And boy, Haruhi's in a nasty mood.
Oh, she is in a mood. Wow,
she really is. Because she's bored.
Yeah, and that can't happen.
No, it's a very bad thing.
Well, and so, she wants to change.
Yeah.
And Kyon's like, well, you change all the time. So what? And she kicks him out.
She kicks him out.
That's a big change for her to change that way.
Definitely in a fit of pique here.
Yeah.
And I love that Kyon has managed to keep his tea still drinkable.
Oh, she's in her outfit because she was hot. But it doesn't breathe.
No.
Her shoulders are cool now, but she's hot still. And he didn't drop his tea when she kicked it.
Yeah.
He kept the tea. The bunny outfit.
Mm-hmm. And so Haruhi just decides to braid Mikuru's hair. And I love how scared Mikuru is for the entire thing, waiting for the other shoe to drop. But they end up having this very quiet day, really.
Playing Othello.
Yeah, despite Haruhi being annoyed. So of course,
Kyon
goes back home, has his normal day.
Little
sister comes in for scissors. Now it's interesting the dialogue here, because she just comes in to grab something, and Kyon says, "Well, it's okay, but ask next time."
Yeah, you never know what a guy may have in his drawers.
Yeah, in many senses. but what's interesting here too is in the context of the series. You know, what is she doing? She is taking something without asking. It's something that Haruhi does all the time. Just,
yeah.
Just do something.
hey,
and ask for it.
Just let me know first.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of a reminder that that's a kind of a Haruhi moment. So he goes to sleep. Now, of course, he talks here about dreams, about REM sleep versus non-REM sleep.
Rapid eye movement.
Mm-hmm. And how you get like dreams.
The vaporization of these.
Yeah, you get this neural network. And you get these very interesting sound waves coming in and out as you hear Kyon and Haruhi
talking Haruhi.
Back and forth.
What?
And she's telling him to wake up.
Wake up.
Where they're in.
What do you mean, wake
this,
up?
Yeah.
Where are we?
Now, what's interesting here to us is that we remember this actual location from the last previous episode. At the end of Live Alive, this is where Haruhi comes out to take a break from school. And she's outside and she talks to her. Yeah. But of course, chronologically, that hasn't happened yet.
Hmm.
So that happens in her future. And it helps us to understand why that's where she ran for refuge. That's why she was running out to this particular tree, this particular spot. Because it may have had a slight memory for her of this place where she woke up with Kyon.
But that's kind of strange. They woke up in school. They don't have a recollection of how they got there. There's something really strange going on.
It's night and it's very drab, these very dark colors. Now, there is a certain anime series this is probably making a reference to. The fact that they are suddenly in a dark, drab sort of sepia tone, or not really sepia tone, but dark colored world. It's called Boogie Pop Phantom.
Boogie Pop Phantom,
Which is another anime series in which the characters are sort of trapped in this strange world because of a particular sequence of events. So this may be sort of a callback to that to a certain extent.
Ooh.
So, of course,
there's
they go out.
There's a strange field there.
Yeah. And something we noted while talking about this is that Haruhi is not excited at all.
Yeah, she's not super excited, and they just had the creepiest thing. They just woke up in the middle of this place. That's pretty creepy. If I woke up somewhere and said, hey, what am I doing here?
And here's the thing.
I really wonder what's going on.
Well, Haruhi wants excitement. She wants something new.
That's about as exciting as...
Yeah, but she's actually downright, and this is worth pointing out, she's actually clingy. She's grabbing onto his...
Like she's kind of scared.
Quite scared. So they do a very surprisingly significant thing. They break a window.
Well, I suppose if there's a force field holding you into the school, they won't mind.
Totally.
You got to get in somehow.
Mm-hmm. So all the classrooms are empty. And of course, it should be noted here that what may be this sort of weird dark gray world outside, it is normal inside the school.
It's full color, yeah.
Yeah. So there's something about the inside of the school that is significant there to what's going on. Kyon makes tea.
Yeah. Sit down and ponder this.
And this is where Haruhi starts realizing, you're awful calm about all this. Why might that be? And Kyon expertly deflects the question.
Now, how did he deflect it? What did he say?
He just changes the subject.
He just
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's
which is lucky because who should show up but Itsuki? And in a little glowing red form.
Yeah. I haven't seen him like that before.
Yeah. Well, he can't quite come through.
No, he's doing all he can to get to that point.
And this is where we get the realization this is the end of the world.
Oh.
By the way.
The end of the world.
In classic Itsuki style. Well, this is it. It's the end of the world. And it's what the season's been building up to, really. This idea that this is what Haruhi could do. She could kind of remake everything.
She could destroy the universe. It only started 3 years ago anyway.
Right. And so we're actually in the process of doing that. What's interesting here, too, about the visual is how Taniguchi is kind of like blood vessels.
Yeah.
Really getting across that sense of it being a very different thing. But Haruhi got bored, so she's remaking everything. Is a bit of a problem.
As she heads...
Mm-hmm. And so she's exploring the school. And the significance of that, of course, is the fact that if she's creating a new world, she is verifying that this is the starting point of the world that she wants.
Foundation.
Mm-hmm. And so she's checking everything out. Exactly. And so we get this very interesting moment at the end when he leaves, because he has a message for Kyon. two messages, in fact. One is from Mikuru.
Hmm.
And what does she say?
What did she say? Check the...
That was Yuki.
That was Yuki.
Mikuru says, I'm sorry, it's all my fault.
Yeah. What? Well, now, it seems like she's afraid to show too much affection mm-hmm. to Kyun because Haruhi gets upset.
Yeah.
Or jealousy, maybe. Mm-hmm. So, and she said, don't get too close to me.
Yeah.
So maybe there is that sort of attraction. Maybe it Absolutely. Is her fault.
Yeah, could be. And of course, and then Yuki says, check the computer.
Check the computer. Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Miss Computer. That makes sense. So he goes over and he presses the good old power button there. I do love the physicality of that desktop PC, you know. For those of you who had those towers,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
press the button, wait for it to boot up. But it doesn't boot up.
Yeah, it just...
Yeah, he just sort of knocks it a little bit. And then
Hello,
we get,
wake up, computer.
And we get the famous prompt.
Dot.
Link this one, dot, not that one. This one right here.
Follow Yuki the white N. rabbit.
Wait. Yep. Well, there Different are certain, yeah, certain similarities. So Yuki says, you know,
the dimensions aren't severed yet.
Yeah.
So if it's over,
yeah. So Yuki's pointing out here that some very interesting stuff. So the Data Thought entity has lost hope because, from their perspective, Haruhi has removed herself from the world.
Yeah.
There is no way for anyone to contact her to change anything. It's done.
Just the fact that the Esper got in to say, mm. turn on the computer. This is the minimal link of.
And then we find out that Haruhi Suzumiya has literally reversed the third law of thermodynamics. And created information from nothing, which is a problem, something that even the entity cannot do. So the point here is this may lead to what they subtitle the evolution of autonomy,
Ooh.
Meaning that, you know, if a created being can suddenly create things out of nothing, that is a major step forward in everything.
Wow.
The idea that things can autonomous...
ex nihilo.
Yes, exactly.
Can out do of nothing. Things.
Whereupon we immediately see a flash of light.
I'll gamble on you.
Yuki says, that's a lovely, lovely line. I'll gamble on you.
She's a very analytical person. The idea that she's going to risk on a yes. gamble on anything is
well kind of put.
Surprising.
Yeah, it's a very key word that she's gambling. And then, of course, even further, I as an individual also feel a desire for you to return.
A desire? She feels a desire.
Mm-hmm. That's awful sweet. So she gives him the thing once again in the library. So what might that be a reference to?
The library.
Do you remember any scenes in the library in this show?
I remember something of a library, but I think I'm blending that with a library scene from a different anime.
So remember, very early on chronologically, he meets Yuki, or not when he meets Yuki, but, Yuki has trouble getting things and reading things, so he gets her a library card.
That's right.
And because she doesn't really know how to do that, she doesn't really think to do that for herself.
Oh.
So this is a callback to when he helped her.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a chance for her to help him, to reciprocate. This is another moment between the two of us. And the implication there, too, is...
Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah. They're kind of alone here at this moment. So this is the chance for just the two of them, and then she references Sleeping Beauty. Now, what's interesting is...
The story of Sleeping Beauty.
Well, Mikuru said something to him a while back, didn't she?
Yeah.
And it was just a quick reference, and when I watched this, I thought, oh, that's what Mikuru said. That's not what Mikuru said.
What did she say?
She said, you remember Snow White.
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Yes. She's referencing Sleeping Beauty.
Snow White and Sleeping Beauty.
Do these two stories have anything in common?
Well, now I'm confusing these. Okay.
Right.
Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. Mm-hmm. So what did Sleeping Beauty do?
Well, Sleeping Beauty, of course, fell asleep with the thistle. Right?
Ooh.
Because of the evil witch. And how does she get woken up?
With a kiss.
And how does Snow White get woken up?
With a kiss.
Indeed.
I think the puzzle pieces are starting to come together now.
And then we get the Titans. No, I'm sorry. wonder where those came from. Anyway, so now Haruhi's excited because now she's seeing physical.
Something weird. Yes. Is it an alien? Weird. Is it a creature? And what is it?
She's just delighted.
Finally.
Yeah. And Kyun realizes what's going on here. He realizes that it's bad that Haruhi is excited.
Yeah, that means, wow.
Yep, now it's something for her to latch on to.
If she has, uh-oh.
Not very good. And so it starts
stuff falling.
Starts destroying the school.
The last remaining little reference to the world that he knows.
Yeah. And here we get the fundamental revelation from Kyun, where he starts saying, I've suddenly now realized what it is I want. And what is it he wants? He wants normality.
Normality.
He wants those friends. He wants
the friends. Yep. He wants everything. Normal life, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Real, all those people.
Normal life, yeah.
Even Ryoko, who tried to kill him.
That's funny. He even mentions her. I want her. I want to just talk with these people. I'm not ready for the end of the world, basically, is what he's saying. And though in not so many words.
Yeah, exactly. It's absolutely he wants that existence of people to talk about. And Haruhi, interestingly, says basically, but I'm sure that will happen. I'm sure that will exist. Somehow know.
She has total confidence.
And you can see it working in her mind where she's like, no, I'm gonna make a world that you're happy with. But Kyun's point is, no, I don't want the world that you make.
I want just the normal life.
I want reality, which is really very much what the show is about. Haruhi is always trying to escape reality to make a more interesting reality. And Kyun's point is that reality is interesting enough.
Yeah.
And exciting enough. And Haruhi even stops him. Does this wonderful sort of baseball slide moment where she says, no, I don't want to go back there. I just don't want to go back there. And here's an interesting moment because, again, the point is this is all about Haruhi. She's the center of all this. And how is Kyun going to convince her of any of this?
Meanwhile, entities are destroying the school.
Everything's getting...
No, brigade leader.
Even to the point where her brigade leader...
gets
blown away.
Then there's two of them. They're multiplying three of them.
Yeah, yeah, more and more. And so, of course, how does Kyun take care of this? And I love how they animate this because she's annoyed, as you might expect. And then as he's talking, you see this moment when suddenly she realizes what's about to happen. Because they're just talking. She thinks a little bit as he's explaining everything. Yeah, lots of explosions. We see Yuki.
Memories.
Mikuru. Yeah, all this experiences they've had. Itsuki. And Haruhi's like, but this is great. Yeah. the God Warriors from Nausicaa as well, I should point out. Definitely a reference back to those.
Most of all.
Yeah. All the things she's done. All the happiness she's had.
Multiplied.
Yeah. And then coming back to normality. All those moments. Closer, and so then suddenly.
Closer,
yep.
Closer.
And here
closer.
We go.
Closer.
And I just really like, she has this moment where her eyes get a little bigger. That's possible. Oh. And there it is. And
the
then
enemy
come in and we get this lovely choral music.
Kisu.
Yep. And everything gets sucked away.
What a kiss.
Yeah, no kidding. Everything's exploding around them, and of course he falls out of bed.
Wait a second.
Yeah. It was only a dream. Oh, and of course, he mentions that I actually liked you better in the ponytail, which is kind of cute.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He says he liked her better in the ponytail.
Yeah. And the significance of that is that he's being honest.
Yeah.
You know, he's finally saying something
he's
to somebody else.
Forward to
yeah.
Her.
I mean, the one thing Kyun always does is he tends to keep everything to himself.
He has that inner monologue.
Yeah. So he finally says something to her and he shows up and.
She's wearing a ponytail.
Yeah.
She's wearing her hair back up in the.
And you'll notice how they play out this scene. He goes over, he sits down, and he very calmly starts chatting. The one thing he never seemed to do. He was never comfortable with Haruhi. He was never comfortable with hanging out with people. And now he's just chatting with her and kind of pulling her out a little bit, drawing her out. And that's where we leave.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Not quite, though. Because we get a little bit from the characters.
A little bit more.
Yeah.
Oh.
So everyone's kind of explaining what's going on. Itsuki's explaining how everything's back. Yeah. Of course, who knows?
So he's conscious of the fact that he almost disappeared from the existence.
Exactly.
Of course, she's reading.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a neat moment with Yuki where he asks her, how many others are there like you out there?
Many.
Yeah. Okay. And are any more of them going to go rogue? And she says, don't worry about it.
I'll protect you.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. And then Mikuru comes in. And of course, from her perspective, she doesn't know everything worked out. So she comes in and she hugs him and he says, hey, you know, you have this star shaped mole.
Oh,
she checks it out. Yep. And there's a wonderful little drawing here where she just
star shaped.
Yeah. Where she, I'll see if I can pause it on here because it's wonderful. Where suddenly, like, her hair literally goes on end. You can get it here.
Oh,
yeah. How the heck did you know?
Let's grab the future.
Where she's going to start kind of beating on him. And there's Haruhi. And she's back to normal. She's happy. Because she has a new costume for Mikuru. Kyon recuses himself. And we
was
have
it
the
a nurse
final...
this time, I think.
Could have been. And so now he's waiting for the brigade leader. And again, here's the important thing. What is he doing? He got here early. He got here an hour early.
Because the last person to get there buys lunch.
Yep. And what's the significance of that?
Well, he was always buying lunch for everybody.
Yeah.
Even though he was not late, he was the last one there.
Yeah. And even more than that, he's now acting. Yeah, he's now actually taking action in his life. An active role to actually, you know.
And now it's back on her. She can't take the lead on that. So she's a little...
Yep.
She
walks across. And actually, even more significantly, note here how when she shows up, she actually checks for traffic.
Yeah.
Suddenly, she's not just charging relentlessly forward. You know, she's a little more centered, a little more focused on what's going on. But she's still a little, obviously a little peeved that she's not the first one there. But that's okay. Because he's going to sit down and talk with her and ask her what she's going to do in the future. And they're going to have a nice, normal conversation. So that's where it ends up.
So now that was the series...
Season one.
Episodes on their broadcast date.
Mm-hmm.
That sequence. Mm-hmm. But on the release on DVD, it was a different sequence.
Yep.
Did they have more episodes, or was that second season, or how did that additional episodes come about?
So when it was originally released on DVD, they just reordered them all into chronological order. Mm. When they made season two, several of the episodes in season two occurred during during season one. Yeah, it all gets kind of reworked around.
Oh, wow.
And some of them happen afterwards. So then when they did the full box set of seasons one and two, they provided all the episodes in release order and all the episodes in chronological order. So you could watch it either order that you wanted to. Yeah, because the fans basically insisted on it. That's how they did it. So, so you can go back and watch it in either order you want and get the intended or the actual order, which is pretty cool. And I agree with Liquid. I think this was a great way of ending the show. I think it is a very effective.
They finally kissed.
Yeah, exactly.
Some satisfaction. So many times anime just keeps you hanging on.
Yeah, everything comes together. And the thing is, in the season, the full season regular chronological order, which ends with Someday in the Rain, as you mentioned before, it's about the fact that everything is normal. They've kind of found their wah, and everything's relaxed. So it is a very quiet episode. It's not climactic. But that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
Kind of like it here. Everything's back to normal. So that was Haruhi. Any final thoughts on Haruhi?
how normal can it be when a girl has that kind of power?
Good point. Yes. And of course, they have not adapted all of the light novels yet either. There's quite a bit more content out there for them to adapt at some point.
Will we see some future
possibly
seasons?
Yeah, and we should point out here that so there are two seasons and a movie. So there's also the movie The Disappearance of Haruhi Suzumiya that was made and released, and that's based on one of the books. And then there's also the current show, The Disappearance of Nagato Yuki-chan, which is a spinoff in which all the characters are normal. And they don't have any special powers, and it's more of like a shoujo comedy series. It's a lot of fun. It's kind of playing off the characters and their relationships and so forth. Kind of weird to see all the characters interacting, but definitely a fun show. So those are, I believe, all of. Oh, and then there were also, I didn't point out, there were a couple of super deformed short animations as well. So those were a lot of fun. Just complete comedies, little 5-minute shorts. So those are out there as well. There were quite a few of those too. So yeah, so Haruhi is definitely, there's a lot there. It's a fun show. A lot of quality animation. A lot of really thoughtful storytelling, really. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
I definitely want to check that out at some point. So yeah. Boogie Pop.
All right.
Boogie Pop, the mind.
So I was saying I was going to do this. While we're watching these, I write down my notes on cards. Evan uses a notepad there. These are all of my cards. So these are all my Boogie Pop Phantom cards. This is just Boogie Pop Phantom notes over the course of this season. The
psychoanalysis of these characters.
Yeah, it just, I've got, well, let me count real quick. I mean, it just goes on.
Many pages.
I've got probably 20, 30 cards in here.
You know what those are? Those are Rorschach butterflies. That's what those are. They're all butterflies. I bet they are. That's what it is.
I bet that is very much the intention with this episode. This is episode 11 called Under Gravity's Rainbow.
Beautiful name.
Yes. Now, Gravity's Rainbow is a reference to the novel Gravity's Rainbow by Pynchon, which we're not going to get into right now because I haven't had time to research that yet. And so this episode begins, interestingly, with episode 1. So we start off by cutting back to the girls and their dates walking off, leaving the girl who just seen the Manticore Phantom.
Now, she's kind of dragging the group down because she's freaking out. And they're like, come on.
Well, here's the first time we see the, from the other perspective where her friend does come back for her and is very concerned.
Yeah.
But the other girl in there says,
it's just her being her.
Exactly. She's very kind of peeved off at all this.
Yeah.
Very annoyed. So you don't really like her very much. That's Rie.
Yeah.
Rie Takai. And so we see a couple of interesting things here when she returns home.
Oh.
So she walks back. And first off, as she's walking past the door, we see a flash of light in one of the bedrooms.
Is that the flash of light incident?
That could be. I mean, that's obvious. That's certainly what we would expect it to be. But nothing happens to her.
No.
And so she walks in and starts to cry.
Yeah, she's not in a good state.
No, and she keeps crying. It's actually interesting in this shot how long they hold on this moment. They want you to realize that she is just miserable.
Yeah.
We go on for it's something like 30 seconds just watching her cry. And even a lot of the shot, we can't even see her face. We're kind of being hidden from that. So she goes over and she grabs a razor blade and she goes to cut herself.
This was hard to watch.
This was very hard to watch. Absolutely. And she's
suicidal about, thoughts.
Yeah.
Why do I live?
Why do I live? And if that isn't a metaphor for the show, why do I live? What's the purpose of all this? Now, a couple of interesting things here. We then see a flash of light, but it's not what we've seen before. We actually see a sphere of light.
Yeah, that's a little different there.
Which then resolves into one of the butterflies.
Thought butterfly or consciousness. Yeah. Thought.
And it seems to be going past Paisley Park, because we see that Ferris wheel. And indeed, we pan down to a shot from the earlier episode where we see Manaka and Boogie Pop facing off, because we find out this is all about Manaka.
Yes.
This episode. And if you thought that was hard to watch, just wait. So it starts off with somebody talking about how I was taken in by him. I loved him.
He left.
He left.
And
yeah. So we start seeing all these characters, and then we focus in on Monaka, who is reaching out for a butterfly for the first time. We see her actually seeking a butterfly, a memory. And so we now see what that memory is, and it is of her birth.
Remembering her grandmother and how she was labeled a devil baby.
The devil's baby. And then this really tough scene, which we should point out, where the grandmother comes over and just whacks her.
Oof.
Because somebody could have seen her, could have seen.
Now she's very young.
Up. Yeah.
But she has a body that's matured.
Very quickly.
Very quickly.
Now what's significant about here is that what we first see in this scene is she has the butterfly. And the grandmother runs over and closes the window. And says, what if somebody saw you? Here's the thing. The grandmother can't see the butterflies.
But she can.
Right. We've seen this before. So here's the thing.
A difference in realities and perceptions there.
So here's the question. What was the grandmother afraid of?
Somebody seeing her.
Not exactly that. She was afraid of somebody seeing her. Hmm. Not the butterflies, Monaka herself.
Her, yeah.
She's trying to keep Monaka completely isolated.
That's a little bit strange.
It is.
That's very strange.
So we get this.
Is that because of her fast aging and the peculiarity in the society?
Presumably so.
Usually treasures homogeny.
Exactly. I think she sees this very strange child who's growing very quickly and who walks around, you know, seeming able to see strange things. And so wants to, and that's the thing. I mean, what you realize over the course of the episode is that the grandmother in her own strange way is trying to protect Monaka. She's trying to keep her from being messed up in the world. And of course,
her mother is already messed up at this point.
Yes.
And is out of the picture.
Yep. And so we see the mother being taken away because she has no memory. They were separated.
She can't remember and giving birth to her daughter.
and to be fair, this is one of the points they make, a mother cannot be nurturing if she doesn't know she has a child.
Yeah, and the fever took away her ability to form memories that last longer than the present moment.
Yeah, so this is why she was taken away, because while it is her mother, which is nice, the mother just cannot provide for her.
Who's this girl?
Yeah, which is
that's
awfully
your daughter.
Sad. Awfully sad. Oh. And again, here's where we see that the grandmother has no idea what these butterflies are. Can't even see them. And then we see the grandmother is dying. And so we have another shocking scene.
This is what creeped me out.
Yeah.
I said, what? Wait, yeah. Did she just garrote her granddaughter?
She did. Well, again, think of it from the grandmother's perspective, as twisted as it is. The grandmother's basically saying,
if I'm going to die, I don't want to leave you unprotected. I'm going to take you with me.
Precisely. Yep.
Strange logic, but.
And again, kind of in fairness, this is the only way she could do that. I mean, it's a very effective kind of solution, if you will, as horrible as it is. But circumstances would intervene, because just at that moment came the Column of Light event.
Column of Light.
And we see a little bit more of what happened during the Column of Light event. Because she is actually, and again, notice how we zoom in on Monaka there. Her senses are sensing what's happening out there at the Column of Light event. She is seeing this conflict, and she is seeing the death of Echoes, which we've seen earlier, and we've seen the Manticore getting caught up in that. And because she has this connection to memories, something of Echoes passes into her, and she gets some bit of that. She actually wakes back up. Now, of course, it should be pointed out, we don't know if she was literally killed. It is certainly possible that the she was knocked unconscious basically by that garrote.
It could be death. It could be brain damage. It could be
right.
She was just choked.
Yeah, and that's kind of where everything goes. Where it's like, okay, well, what's actually going on there?
The ambiguity. But then we see her at a later date taking a photo with her grandmother, and she's 5 years old. Of course, she's almost in the body of a young adult here at this point.
So she's going about five times the normal rate.
Oh, that's
just like Nagi.
Yeah. Wow. But
and here's where the show starts to really layer things on at you, because at this point they're even having narration over the dialogue. Mm-hmm. So you can't even tell what the dialogue is necessarily, because they're both going full throttle. And then of course the grandmother dies, and here's where you find out.
Oh, yeah.
Where all that happened. You see Minaka actually putting the flower
in her mouth.
In her mouth.
And the place is overgrown. Of course, yeah. A 5-year-old knows what to take care of a place. So that kind of.
Yeah.
But there's also that strange experience where things were rusting prematurely.
Right.
Things were growing. Strange radiation. Who knows?
And you notice that Minaka seems to have no negative emotional reaction.
Yeah, she doesn't know how. She doesn't have a framework to put these emotions in.
Yeah, she just puts the photo away and walks out.
She goes out for the first time. Yeah, she's been sequestered this whole time, and now she sees outside the flow of constant words is one of the things she notices.
Yeah, and all the memories. She starts.
And she sees the memories everywhere. Pop, 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 mm-hmm. pop. The butterflies just come.
She's just sucking them out. Now, that's kind of your first hint that, you know, we know what happens in previous episodes when you start messing with other people. You know, that's not necessarily the best thing to do. So she's able to run off with her butterflies. It's a beautiful sequence, actually, as she's going around. And she starts learning from the memories.
Which is, I suppose, if you've been sequestered in out of communication with everybody your entire mm-hmm. life, there's a lot there to absorb.
Right. And so suddenly she gets this interesting moment where she sees this man dying. And she sees echoes. So this is our only moment back where we see what actually happened to echoes.
This is where I'm glad I had you as a guide on this, because I have no idea who this guy Echoes really is. And echoes?
So echoes, and they mention his name in the scene, which is how you know his name. So echoes is the guy who died in the Column of Light event, who created the Column of Light event. He was the source of all of that. And he was being experimented on, which is one of the reasons why he's so screwed up.
Wow.
And in his death,
did his death cause the Column of Light, or was the Column of Light the cause of his death?
The Column of Light was a consequence of his death.
A consequence.
Yes. He was dying, and the Column of Light event occurred when he died. But
there was also the Manticore who was somewhere around at that
yes,
point.
Yes, and got caught up in that. And so that outpouring of energy caused sort of a shadow of the Manticore to pop out, called the Manticore Phantom, and of course also the Boogie Pop Phantom, because the Boogie Pop was there as well. So we see Minaka there, and we see this interesting sort of moment where she is now kind of cursed with the same thing that happened to Echoes, because her life, if you will, was
it's formed by these memories, and she has apparently picked up a butterfly from somebody.
And again, that's your hint that we're seeing kind of a memory here. But because the Column of Light event created this sort of life in her, gave her a new lease on life, she now, just like Echoes, is damaged by what happened to him. Echoes was named Echoes because he can only repeat things that have been told to him.
And now she's absorbed this fragment of consciousness, this mm-hmm. butterfly, and she engages in that behavior.
Right.
She echoes back to everybody.
And here's one of the interesting things. Because Minaka is pulling in all of these butterflies, she has all this knowledge, massive amounts of knowledge, which is very dangerous. So it is almost like Echoes protects her by blocking her ability to pass that on to other people. She can only echo things back, so she's not going to get in trouble. Imagine what happened if this random girl starts walking up to people and spouting, you know, all that information to her. So if she looks like this, if she talks like that, if she talks just with echoes, it's fine.
But to be able to pick up all those fragments of memories and consciousness, she can also send out those butterflies, as we've seen in previous episodes. She'll have a butterfly and somebody will get hit with one, and all they'll have the memory. And
And here's where we see a little bit more detail on something that happened before. We see the scene where Minaka is there, and the boy and the girl who could disassemble things show up. And now we see specifically that Poom Poom is created very deliberately by Minaka.
Yeah.
We see her sifting through his memory for that memory of him in that play. And we see her finding that and literally pulling Poom Poom out of him. And so he runs off. The sister runs off after him because Poom Poom is the voice of Monaka. He is the one who can actually interact with other people in a way that she can't.
And we see that she created him in the previous episode.
Yeah. And so here's where we see that the literal creation of that. And he, now we see why Poom Poom was such a problem. Mm. Why Poom Poom wasn't just childhood memories kind of run amok. This was Monaka literally trying to interact with the world through this and kind of get around that limitation she had. And the point is, that's bad.
Yeah.
Weepop is saying, no, you that makes you an enemy of this world because you are changing things around. And now, to quote Doctor Who, and now here's where things really get interesting. Because now we have the present day, and we see a couple of things. We see a couple of memories flashing back to stuff. We see, importantly, the creation of Boogie Pop. She's now, Boogie Pop has shown up to Monaka, and Monaka is now remembering things that happened to the creation of Boogie Pop. In fact, we even see this moment early on, which should be noticeable to us. Notice Boogie Pop back there, much younger. That is from quite a bit earlier in her time.
That is quite a bit younger.
So we see all these moments. So Monaka runs off, now an old woman. Boogie Pop is just, you know, following her.
Still probably not very old in age, but physically. Right.
Exactly. And then what should happen? We see Boogie Pop appearing.
Phantom, though.
Right. Seeing now, that glow.
This is the thing, the distinction between Boogie Pop and Boogie Pop Phantom.
Exactly. So the Boogie Pop Phantom is that shadow created during the Column of Light event.
Which one gets the whistle?
Well, that's an interesting question.
Do they both?
As far as I know, Boogie Pop gets the whistle. Boogie Pop Phantom does not. I may be wrong about that. So Boogie Pop uses her little light lariat there to grab Monaka. Of course, this is a very difficult moment for us. I mean, Boogie Pop doesn't know what happened to Monaka as a child earlier on.
That's funny to think. She still is a child.
She's 5 years old.
Her experience. Yeah. She doesn't have her memory of
being choked. Yeah. But Boogie Pop, you know, points this out. And then what happens, but we get another lariat comes in to disrupt this. And it's Boogie Pop Phantom stopping Boogie Pop.
As Boogie Pop said to Boogie Pop Phantom.
It's very complex and difficult to understand. Yeah. Monaka runs off. But here's where we get a bit more of that backstory between the two of them, because Boogie Pop Phantom takes Boogie Pop off, and they start walking off. Monaka goes into the House of Mirrors.
Almost in an effort to seek refuge from the two Boogie Pops.
Right. And so here we see this wonderful visual that really gets to a lot of the fundamental concepts of the series. She's seeing herself. She's seeing herself from multiple angles.
Reflecting on oneself.
Yes. She's able to really see what's become of her. And we see this little glow appear, and that's some of that Echo's energy, if you will, that allows her to live. And she starts creating all these butterflies. And the butterflies pop, and we see all these people. All the memories are now turning back into their respective people, including her mom, I should point out.
Almost fantastically. And at this point, do we not see phantoms of people who have died?
We do.
So these bits of consciousness have almost, they themselves are phantoms in and of itself.
It is, absolutely. It should also be pointed out here, too, that I didn't notice the first time on. Note that Monaka is talking.
Yeah.
She says to Boogie
Pop. She's finally got her awareness. She's not just parroting back.
Yeah.
So the residual effect of the Echo's consciousness is gone to a degree where she can at least interact and not just mirror back.
And what's interesting is the first words out of her mouth are you here to kill me? I don't want to die.
She has that self-preservation.
Which she didn't have at the beginning of the episode.
No.
So she's starting to come into this realization that she wants to continue to exist. And so she's confronted with her age here. And she has this interesting kind of reaction where she talks about how she wants to become kind of one with everything.
Yeah, which is, that's
Well, it's a very Buddhist way of seeing things.
And it's almost what happened with the dispersal of the Column of Light incident.
Yeah.
All this energy was radiated and permeated the city, and the beings that were originally there were dispersed to a point where they're only phantoms now. And so her non-existence, yet still having existence in a dispersed format, is not necessarily a form of death. It feels very Buddhist in the concept.
And so she's really struggling with this idea of, okay, what does death mean for someone who's already dead? Really? interesting question. And so now we see Boogie Pop Phantom showing Boogie Pop.
Oh, we see the cocoon.
The cocoon. And there we see in the cocoon some familiar faces. These are the various characters that Boogie Pop Phantom has rescued over the course of this. And now we understand her agenda.
Rescued?
Well, in very, very precisely. Boogie Pop Phantom explains that Menaka and the others have been granted abilities. Abilities that will eventually come to the human race, but that are not accepted yet.
No.
Nobody realizes and understands them. So she is preserving them in stasis, or allowing them to live, to still, you know, be alive, so they can come back at some future date when they will be accepted.
Is that the same sort of advancement that Menaka had?
Apparently, yes.
But she was an enemy because she was too far.
Well, she was an enemy because she was using that in the world.
At that stage.
At that stage.
The world was not ready for this, and it
was
therefore an enemy.
Yes, she was changing the world.
That makes sense.
Badly. So, yeah. So, and Boogie Pop Phantom's point is that Menaka is so weak now that she is no longer a threat. She should be put in stasis, more like these people. The problem is she can't be because she's kind of dead.
Last episode, didn't she fall from a very high point?
She did. And that, again, was one of the hints that the show was providing, is that how did she survive that fall? Because she's already dead.
She's already.
Yeah. So Menaka is now left alone, significantly. And her light is filling that. And then who should walk into there? This man that we're kind of curious who this is. It's Echoes. That's the man we saw laying down. That's the man we saw being
tested.
Oh,
whoa.
Yeah. And we have another flash of light, but significantly, it's a sphere of light.
Yeah.
Not a column.
No column this time.
This is Menaka releasing all of her memories.
Oh, and she has been collecting them.
She sure has, for weeks and weeks.
It is a butterfly invasion. Beware, everybody. Here come the butterflies.
And so something very interesting happens here, which is something we've been saying for a long time on this show. But these fly out, and what should we happen to cut back to? But Rie coming back home. And who should she see but herself, about to cut herself?
Oh.
And we realize these aren't purely, they are memories of reality. These are people experiencing the memories of what they were about to do, if you will. And so she comes home and realizes this is what was going to happen to me. People are seeing these memories.
Oh.
I think that happened to them. We see that the police was happening to the police.
And how better to experience a memory than the phantom of the experience?
Yes.
Because otherwise it would be a reality.
Exactly.
And so the phantom of the experience is the memory of the sort of a second plane overlapping the current plane. It's very...
Exactly. And so Rie says, quite significantly, this time I stopped myself.
She stopped herself from killing herself.
Yes.
This time.
And so
how many times has she?
Well, and that gets back. I mean, it's a very common thing among those who are suffering from depression and especially suicidal depression, is that often they're stopped by external things.
Somebody else has picked up on the signals
factors. Often it's literally just, you know, there's a sound from another room. It is that those little things can be enough.
just enough.
But this time,
this time it was her.
It was her,
herself.
Very intentionally.
Stopping herself.
Seeing what was happening. And then Minaka shows up.
To her mom. In her hospital room.
Lovely little moment here.
Oh, this was great. This gave me warm fuzzies.
Exactly. As sad as it is.
So it's sad, but it gives closure.
It does.
She says, "Mom," you know. She says she thanks her for being born.
I'm glad
her
I was born.
Mom actually recognizes her.
Yeah,
mom finally recognizes daughter,
and she starts to cry. A little subtle thing there. You can see the tears coming down the mother's cheeks as she realizes she has a daughter. And
but sadly, it doesn't last.
The energy is dissipating. But Minaka is literally, you know, killing herself in the sense that she is releasing all that energy that kept her alive.
And her phantom is now losing energy as it's dispersed itself. Mm-hmm. And the mother's experience is now...
Well, that's the thing.
Fading away almost with the phantom.
Right. You know, these aren't permanent memories. Mm-hmm. They will fade.
In fact, I think the nurse comes in the next day and she doesn't remember.
Yeah. Well, but what's interesting here
except
is
she wrote it down.
Well, she wrote it down, but something else is interesting here. The floor is littered
with the cards. Yeah, it's like, what happened here?
Now, the mother doesn't remember it. She's not remembering it. She remembers that Minaka was the name she wanted to give to her daughter.
Yeah.
Which is good. But it's significant that last night she tore up all her cards.
Yeah.
She may need them now, but at one point...
She was... Yes. Back in her right mind.
It's very much like the end of Lane, where, you know, the fact that there was at least one moment where she remembered means that it's there somewhere. And then the rainbow. And now we get the two characters from earlier on.
Ooh.
Walking along.
It's actually got some color to it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a little brighter.
And there's a rainbow.
And a rainbow.
Yeah.
This is very not like this series. I'm feeling uncomfortable. Where's the dark muted colors, the sepia tones?
Yeah. And it's a very significant thing, that the electromagnetic forces down. And they have this interesting line in here where they're talking back and forth. And one of the girls is saying, "Let's go do this thing." And she says, "There's always something fun to do." And I think that's a big reflection back on the themes of the episode. Yeah. You know, it's never hopeless. There's always something to do.
There's always something to do.
Yep. Now we go over, and the next episode thing here, interestingly, is a clip show of previous episodes. So we don't know what we're going to get in the next episode. In our final episode here,
Requiem. What was this? A Requiem, yes. Appropriate for...
Exactly. We start with this... shot of a room, and unless you're sort of familiar with things, it would be hard pressed for you to tell that it's a hotel room. That is what it is.
And all those buttons kind of make it less like a real phone, more like a service phone.
Yep. And so we
took a little bit of looking, though, because I'm thinking, I don't see a lot of personal things.
Exactly.
No personalization.
That's the thing, you know, two beds and there with a big window.
Who gets a call waking them up in the morning?
Right. That's the sign.
Yeah, that's what got me is, okay.
Now, a couple of things.
Otherwise, it's like, who's calling at this hour? Why are you waking me up?
Now, and of course, similar to that is, what is a phone? It's an electronic device. Mm-hmm. Somebody's getting a message from outside. We don't hear what it is. So again, that's kind of our hint that, okay, we're still in the ideas of this. And of course, she has a sort of a yukata there that she's wearing. And then she opens the curtain. And holy guacamole,
what's
going on?
Beautiful, bright, colorful day. Sun is shining. Birds are chirping. What's going on?
If you've been watching this show,
are we on the same anime?
Exactly. What the heck's going on? And she turns and says, "It's time to get up. Toka.
Toka, what are you doing in the bed next to this person here?"
He's all mussed up, having a difficult time getting awake. Toka, the one with the completely normal life.
Kazuka is her friend there. Yeah.
Yes. And so they're having this time in Tokyo. They're about to go for their college entrance exams.
Hmm.
They're seniors, and they're heading out, and they say it's time to kick some ass. Now, here's the thing about that thing. Of course, now, actually, I should mention a few things here. You know, that is, of course, an excellent way of describing Boogie Pop. He'll kick some ass. And then also we notice the subtitle of the episode. It's a requiem.
Sleep ends everything. A good night's sleep can wake up refreshed.
But also death is called sleep.
Death is sleep too.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so here we see some English on there. And so we realize.
Ah, flashcards.
It's funny how
school time.
They do a great job here in the dub, actually, of how do you get across the fact that they're learning English in an English dub?
Yeah.
So what they do is she's saying English and then responding with the Japanese word, or the Japanese phrase.
Nice.
It's a slick way of doing it. So you get some Japanese stuff. And of course, the words they use here are significant. The actual words have relevance back to the themes of the show.
Oh, the map. The map of the metro.
Understand the subway system. Oh gosh, they can't figure it out. And again, this gets back to the themes of the show. They're lost.
Follow the yellow brick road. It'll lead you to the subway.
They're trying to understand this new place.
Yeah.
Boogie Pop Phantom is about growing up. And they're in this new, completely strange place.
Larger world.
Yeah.
It's a huge world. Mm. It's filled with people. It's complicated.
Yeah.
How do you navigate this new world?
And it's also interesting seeing the very mundane aspects of this world.
This was interesting.
Yeah.
So there's a mention an office lady murdered.
Yeah.
Serial killer. Who's done it?
Yes.
A serial killer who's killing these office ladies.
Yeah, and it's in Akihabara, they mentioned.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah, a little bit. So they finally run off. They find their stuff. The Toka has a difficult time dealing with electronics. Which is hilarious.
I'm not familiar with these modern devices.
Yeah, exactly. But they get on. And it's interesting, too, notice how they get on, they're relaxed, and then they have this sort of surprised reaction to
everybody's
place.
All quiet.
It's not the quietness. It's full.
With people everywhere. There's no place to sit. They right. haven't.
They're used to this little, small city. That
she's got her
from.
Bag, there.
Yeah.
There's
well, you mentioned the bag. Good for you.
She's got two bags.
She's got two bags. She's got her backpack and she has the Boogie Pop bag.
Boogie Pop's in there.
Every time she's wandering around with that bag, Boogie Pop is
not, somewhere shows up not far behind.
Exactly.
Clark Kent.
Right. So then we see Kazuko.
Exam entrance time. So they're in Tokyo to take their exams.
Yep. It's also interesting how when Kazuko walks in, she has this moment of almost awe. This is her first time.
The stairs that go up to get to the seat. Yep. It's all a big auditorium, lecture hall style room.
It's her first.
It's not a little classroom, flat floor. This is like...
Yep. This is the next stage of her life. this is her growing up. And it's interesting here how much time the episode spends on her in this room. It takes forever.
Cool.
She's taking her exam.
11:05.
Yeah.
Exam time.
It's only an hour-long exam.
Everybody begin.
We really spend time with that. Because, again, that's important.
Yeah. That's a lot of life going into getting ready for that.
Exactly.
She finally has a break now, which I'm sure she'll return to more exam later on.
Definitely. But she goes to find Toka.
So where's Toka?
Well,
she's around here somewhere.
There's her card. There are pencils. There's her book bag.
Where's she?
Her ID pass. Where is she? What else isn't there? She only took
one bag.
Right. That's strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
So now we go to editorial and the detective. The detective we've seen off and on throughout the story.
The investigative detective who's curious about Nagi's dad.
Yeah. And he befriended Nagi.
Mm-hmm.
We see this office lady who's being berated by her boss. Not an uncommon sight in a lot of these offices. And so he invites her back to his office, which seems kind of strange.
Just to talk,
of course.
Poor girl's all broken up about her boss berating her.
So he takes her there. We get this lovely little
Akihabara.
Momoro Oshii
places.
In Akihabara.
Foreshadow.
Yep. And he has this very serious expression on her face. And she realizes pretty quickly that this is not a crying on your shoulder sort of moment.
This is not normal. This is now, not an office. Well, this is
well, here's the thing.
Shades. What's going on
here? That's the thing. Notice She comes in,
dark,
and it's
place.
A normal office. Look at the look at all the stuff around, and look at the slats.
They're all normal.
They're all completely normal. As soon as she realizes what's going on, she turns around, and you know, she pulls a few of them down. Like, but suddenly, it's fallen apart. Everything here is
old. It's not as it seems.
No, but fortunately, Toka's out walking with her bag. Strangely enough,
Just the one,
and she just happens to walk by
when Boogie Pop appears.
Yeah, and then what should happen?
That's a long break from her exams.
Yes, and we hear the whistle. The Boogie Pop whistle.
The infamous Boogie Pop whistle.
Yep. And the door opens and there she is.
There's Boogie Pop.
Yeah.
Now, is that Boogie Pop or Boogie Pop Phantom?
That is Boogie Pop.
That is Boogie Pop.
Corporal. Because we saw Boogie Pop Phantom present. Fade away.
Yeah.
In the previous scene. And now we get some backstory where Boogie Pop explains what's going on here. It's sadly, the detective is just like Menaka, really.
Ah.
That Corona Detective Agency, so that's the right place. But he hasn't been there in a long time.
Apparently, yeah.
So he was affected by all this, and we see the moment actually where Boogie Pop becomes Boogie Pop. Toka happened to be walking along, and saw this thing happen, and took on the cloak.
She took the mantle.
Yeah, exactly.
Of Boogie Pop,
quite literally. She just happened to witness this thing, and she discovers, or we discover, rather, that what is inside him, again, flashback to that, is the Manticore. And the Manticore literally comes out of Kuroda.
Split. It's like he's possessed, but he's double.
Yep, there's the Manticore Phantom.
Manticore's got his body.
And we saw before how he can travel around as an electrical impulse.
Yeah.
And they point out, they're in Akihabara.
There's
everywhere for him
wired.
To go.
Yeah.
Perfect place.
So he holds him.
Ah, Kuroda does the heroic thing. It says, kill us both now.
Kill us.
And that way he can't go anywhere.
And Boogie Pop conveniently has the electromagnetic bombs that was that Nagi put them.
Yeah. Nagi did.
In the tunnel with the cocoons.
Mm-hmm. I love this moment.
Never got a chance to detonate them.
Where she puts the rest
of
them.
I saved a few more too.
And she puts the rest of them in a miscellaneous junk
for sale.
For sale spot in Akihabara. Perfect place.
I mean, you'd never notice it mixed in with all the other electronics or stuff. And here's one, and there's a stack of them downstairs.
Exactly. Now, again, the point here is that it's an electromagnetic bomb. It's not going to blow the building up.
No, it's not. Yeah, it's an electromagnetic pulse to disrupt all the magnetic waves.
Yep.
That have been the life, pretty much, of the phantoms that were created after the light experience.
Exactly, and significantly to Kuroda, it's what's keeping him alive.
Yeah.
So as soon as that happens, Kuroda's life force is removed.
It's almost like there's too much coherence in those waves, and she has to disrupt them to dissipate his ability to form his consciousness.
Exactly. That's exactly what she has to do.
And she detonates.
And she detonates, and that's it.
She will detonate as we're watching right now. Yeah.
And she mentions this interesting symbol. I don't know if we're going to actually see the imagery here. But she mentions, we'll see if we can
pulse,
actually see it here.
Pulse.
She talks about how these characters, the other people that were saved, they are being held in stasis. And she has this phrase, their nerves are spreading across the city.
Now, I was curious about this part. I have a big question mark going, huh? Because there was so much going on. Mm. Just the idea that the Manticore had possessed this guy. Yeah. And I'm thinking, well, when did he possess him? Mm. How did he get a hold of him? Was Nagi aware that when Nagi was around, was he Manticore at that point? But the fact that he's gotten to this point, I was distracted with all the, Toka or Boogie Pop actually... harvested all these electromagnetic pulses, and then Boogie Pop started explaining stuff, and I was completely lost at that point. What was Boogie Pop saying?
So she was saying that these people are not actually hilarious. Sorry. the character that's like dancing in surprise at us. uncharacteristically sort of fun animation there for the show. So her point is that the people saved, they're still alive in a fundamental sense. They're in stasis, but their minds are still there, and they're
she saved them. And right. and I turned to you and said, save them? Save them.
Well, they're in that cocoon.
So those are the ones that she saved. She put them, she's like a spider. Yes. She put them in that.
Yeah. Well, let's see, where are we?
I wonder about those spiders.
Well, here's
now.
The thing. In the opening credit sequence, there's this interesting little moment. You can see it. I don't know. Let's see what we can find here. You can go all the way back to this opening credit sequence that we've seen 12 times now. And we're seeing all this stuff about the city, about all these things happening, all these characters walking around subway systems, etc. And these little moments. But there's this interesting little bit of animation in here that they've been hinting at the whole time to kind of give you an idea of what's going on. And here are our characters, of course. And various girls going back and forth. Lovely jazz theme, and we should point out the opening credit sequence of this.
Very catchy.
It's really a cool jazz sequence. The clock symbolizing time passing. Nagi and her awesome bicycle, motorcycle rather.
And her wonderful hair.
Wonderful hair flying all over the place. Rather strange hairstyle there. And I think it's at this point somewhere. And there are the butterflies. Oh yeah, there's Kuroda, there's the detective, and we now find his. So, and to your previous point, the Column of Light event happened 1 month previous. So Nagi knew him well before that. So they had a very normal relationship there. But yeah, in this at some point, and I'm there. We go.
Oh,
so we've seen nerves spreading across the city for every episode, and that's what's been happening. Is that those characters are now able to experience, are able to spread themselves around in ways that they couldn't before. And, so sadly, Kuroda fades away, and the office lady wakes back up, and Boogie, we have this really funny moment, actually. Boogie Pop says, I feel sorry for Toka, because I realize I'm now late for a test.
And at this point, I was thinking, does Toka even realize?
Well, she doesn't appear to. She doesn't appear to.
So it's almost like Boogie Pops possessed her.
Yes, very much so. Quite explicitly. And so Toka comes out. Now, there's this interesting talk back and forth between the two of them.
The size of the city almost swallows you up.
Yeah. I love this scene. Because, again, it gets to the fact that they're now facing their future. The fact that now they're going to have to go somewhere. So Toka buys a theremin.
A theremin. Which is a really interesting electronic musical instrument. If you've never seen this, you probably would recognize the use in, I think, Star Trek's opening theme, the old classic Star Trek. It's that weird sort of electronic music.
Yeah.
And it's all played with two different electrodes,
mm-hmm.
and you put your hand in the air in between them and changing the electromagnetic field with your hand plays it.
Indeed. funny that of all the instruments she could choose, it's the one that is played by disrupting the electromagnetic field.
Electromagnetic fields. Wouldn't you know it?
Yeah. And again, gosh, the show is so deliberate. You know, if you know that is, you immediately key into, huh, that's interesting.
Ah, a theremin. Yeah. So, what a strange... Okay, everybody's getting piano, bass, flute, guitar. I want a theremin.
So again, there's that lovely scene where they're talking about how the city seems to swallow you up, and gets back to some of the themes of the show, that the characters, most of the characters in this show feel like they've been swallowed up by something else.
Yeah, and some of them quite literally.
Yeah, true. And how do you deal with that? How do you work with that? And they're working with that by addressing it head on. By finding an appropriate, mature...
No evading by ignoring or trying to bury the whole thing. They're dealing with it.
Yeah, very directly. And so now you have this back and forth between Toka and Kazuko. Kazuko runs back to her room. Now, a couple interesting things here. She seems to have an apartment now. And she's opening up a thing. Now, we wouldn't know what this is necessarily. That is the results of her exams that she has in her thing. So she gets it and she opens it up and she squeezes a little bit. Yes. And she calls.
I take it she got the results she wanted.
Apparently. And she calls and she says, "How'd you do?" "Oh.
Oh.
You know, thank you." And you realize Toka didn't do so well. Maybe because she was out wandering. Maybe
she was out.
and again,
setting off electromagnetic.
Right. And that's the thing. Maybe that was the price.
Yeah.
Maybe that was set. And unwittingly, maybe she was kind of, her future is screwed.
Yeah.
Because she was chosen as Boogie Pop. Yeah, no kidding. And so here's the graduation ceremony. Hey. We see Nagi and Toka and her.
Congratulations.
All there. And they're all, you know, heading off and taking photographs. Yep.
We're never going to see each other again.
Yeah. And Kazuko tries to get Nagi. Remember they had a scene earlier before. You know, they've talked before.
They have. Up on the roof, I believe.
Up on the roof, yep.
About the book, father's book. And,
exactly.
And some of those concepts.
So they know each other.
Come on, take a photo. Take
and
a
everyone's
photo.
Kind of like, no, what? No, Nagi.
What a photo.
Do we have to? So we get this lovely little moment between the two of them. And then we finally get the moment between all three of them. And Toka shows up as well.
And so she's got her both bags.
Yeah, exactly.
She never goes anywhere without it.
And so they start talking. Now, the English director of this says he believes that the positioning of these characters is very deliberate here. We were talking about this earlier, how you have Nagi and Toka on either side of Kazuko. Kazuko, the normal human, and the two kind of defenders on either side of her, trying to protect her, each in their own way. Nagi doesn't know everything that's going on, but she is damn well determined to find out and to keep people protected. Whereas Toka is secretly Boogie Pop, and in fact, there's the duffel bag next to her. And even to that point, notice that Toka and Nagi are pointing in opposite directions.
Opposite ways.
Yep. But of course, Kazuko is pointing in the same direction as Toka.
Yeah.
They're the friends. And it's interesting kind of the commentary that has on the fact that, you know, Nagi, the price Nagi has to pay is a certain amount of loneliness. Mm. I mean, she did have this growth hormone, which has definitely changed her life. But because
saved her from now she was injected by who?
She was injected by Kuroda, the detective.
The detective. Yes. He injected her. Well, he was the guy who jumped out the window.
He was. Yes.
In that episode, when we saw her getting the injection, mm-hmm. that for some reason the nurse or doctor who came in and saw the injection on the floor didn't do anything
here's
about
the thing. What Kuroda doesn't realize, or didn't realize, is that he is a split personality. Mm. He was a split personality of this reporter who was working for the organization, the one that has all these monsters, the one they're talking about. The reporter had this detective personality. In fact, Boogie Pop says at one point, it's not uncommon for detectives to have split personality. Reporter wanted
this puzzle
life.
Just is continually unfolding.
And so the reporter was the one who injected Nagi.
Now it's starting to make sense because I'm remembering back. Okay, he's a reporter. He's a detective. He's a reporter.
Yeah,
he's a detective.
Exactly.
Wait a second. Which is he? Investigative reporter.
Right.
And he physically showed the when the Manticore came out of him, mm-hmm. he showed as two personalities there, and that's wow.
So you've got these folks here who are definitely trying to keep everything, keep reality going. And then what happens? We hear a song. Oh, and we cut back to the perpetual hospital. Oh, that's right. When we see Monaka's mother.
Mom hears the theremin music.
Yep. And she's holding the note that says, "Monaka came to see me." and they start hearing the theremin music. Because what's happening?
Well, the theremin was put in one of the tunnels with the cocoons.
Yep.
And apparently it is being activated. Yeah. Something is going through the magnetic fields there. Mm-hmm. And who knows whether it's phantom or real or what, but it is definitely changing the electromagnetic fields in an echo chamber that is probably wafting all over the place.
Yeah, and folks can hear it. Now, there's this moment that we debated about.
Ah, yes.
Because Nagi says to Toka, what was the exact
now,
line?
Now, earlier I was thinking, does Toka realize that Boogie Pop is possessing her?
Right.
And then Nagi comes and says, say hello to her for me.
Mm-hmm.
And
Toka
turns around.
She turns around, looks at some of the other girls.
And then she turns back.
Turns back.
And sort of nods, like she knows what she's talking about.
Right.
But wait.
Which her.
How does she know what's being talked about if she's unaware that Boogie Pop has taken her away from her exam, kind of screwed up her future? And you said, well, maybe she doesn't. Maybe that's... And then when we listen to it again, we notice the Boogie Pop whistle come about right around that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so almost like she turns... looks at the girl thinking that Nagi's referring to the girl that she's looking at.
Yep.
When she turns back, it's like the eyes of Boogie Pop
and
the whistle and Boogie Pop saying, yep, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And off she goes. And off they go. Because now everything's back to normal. But, of course, we can't just end there.
I wonder if she got into a good school.
Yeah, I know. She
it was that exam. It was that one exam.
Yeah. but she talks about memory. And she says, I feel like I've lost something special.
Hmm.
And it's interesting how the show is about protecting. It's about maturity. It's about growing up. And that does mean you lose something.
Hmm.
You do lose your childhood.
In order to progress, you have to leave something behind.
Yeah, you're putting...
To move forward.
Exactly. You know, maturity is a matter of sifting through that which is appropriate, not appropriate, and leaving the inappropriate
stuff behind. What to leave.
Right.
Take Poom Poom's story, leave Poom Poom's.
Yeah, exactly. And it's significant that the final shot is this beautiful image of the city.
Which was otherwise overcast with this strange glow.
Right. And again, importantly, we're back in their home city. We're not in Tokyo anymore. So this is definitely their city. And, I mean, partly I think this is a reference to Whisper of the Heart, but that's a whole other question. Mm. But the scale of it, the size of it, you know, how do you live in that?
Wow.
How do you survive? And you survive by adaptation, by maturing. You know, this whole show has been about people with these immature views on reality, that you either ignore it, or you rise above it, or you find ways to control it.
Make your own reality.
Yeah, exactly. Or just kind of live in a childlike, you know, euphoria all the time. And their point is that the city will crush you. It will eat you alive, quite literally.
Yeah.
If you try to do that. That, you know, you have to face it. And what's interesting is you have to face it not in the sense of picking up a sword and fighting things. You face it by being very mature and just doing very ordinary, simple day-by-day stuff.
Growing into it gradually.
It's very significant that Toka doesn't have a transformation sequence.
Yeah.
Toka does not do anything heroic. Toka has a completely ordinary just life.
Normal. Aside from carrying a bag everywhere.
Well, yes, exactly.
And that, I do that, so.
Yeah, true. And that's the point. They're...
maybe I'm Boogie.
Hey, but they would have kind of destroyed their message or done a problem with their message if Toka had some heroism to her.
Yeah.
If there was some aspect of her being a magical transforming girl,
it would have
or whatever.
Been her personal volition of some sort. And,
right.
And that would have completely made it a different story.
And even further, you know, if she was if there was anything that she was doing that had a sort of power to it, then that would have implied that in order to do all this, you have to be special. you have to have special powers. You have to, you know, fight the world. But Toka does very normal things.
Her ignorance of the whole situation is kind of reassuring.
Yes, exactly. Right.
She acts like a normal person.
Mm-hmm. And she's the one who wins, if you will. You know, she has normal life. She has friends. She has someone to go to Tokyo with her when she has to take her exams. It's a very comforting life. And so that fundamentally, that is what it's all about, is the beauty and the importance of living an ordinary life, not in the sense of a mundane life, not in the sense of an interesting life, but in the sense of all of the amazing things. There's always something interesting to do, always something fun to do in life.
Wow. And you don't have to have, what was that drug that they used?
Yes.
You don't have S, type S. You don't have to have type S to do that.
Exactly. So that is Boogie Pop Phantom. And we end with a montage of the entire series all the way through, reminding us of how sepia toned and drab that whole story was. And it was very much intentional.
I really felt like I went over the rainbow when I finally, whoa, is this the same anime?
Yeah. And again, it's one of the brilliant things of the show is they're saying that wasn't just purely a weird stylistic choice.
It embodies the transformation, yeah. Almost the butterfly transformation, exactly. From the cocoon
to
butterfly.
Yep, exactly.
So many metaphors running through this show.
And that's the thing. And people get people often turn away from Boogie Pop Phantom, and I appreciate that. It's a tough show to comprehend. And so I would say simply do not turn away and assume that it is just completely obscure for no reason.
Yeah, there's a method to the madness.
Right.
And when you start to unravel the puzzle, it's really kind of exciting.
It is.